There were fewer than 2,000 people in attendance for the April 18, 1981 Triple-A baseball game between the visiting Rochester Red Wings and the Pawtucket Red Sox, the Paw Sox, as the faithful call them. When the last handful of diehard fans left McCoy Stadium, the date had turned to April 19th. They had sat in the cold for nearly 8.5 hours. They had seen 882 pitches thrown, 246 batters come to the plate, 60 strikeouts, and the equivalent of 3 2/3 games. And this one still wasn't over. When the 2-2 tie was finally broken 2 months later, the Paw Sox won 3-2 in 33 innings. Dan Barry, a columnist for the New York Times, tells the story of the longest professional baseball game ever played in his new book, Bottom of the 33rd, Hope, Redemption, and Baseball's Longest Game. He joins us from member station WBUR in Boston, home to the Paw Sox major league affiliate, the Boston Red Sox. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Thanks very much.
Well, as we all know, there is no clock in baseball, so theoretically, a game could go on forever, and it seemed at times that this one would. What was it about this one weird night that kept things tied up for so long?
The game was tied in the bottom of the ninth, 1-1 by Pawtucket. And in the 15th inning, I think everybody thought, okay, we're almost done here, because most baseball teams have curfews, except for some reason, that one paragraph that allowed for a curfew in the International League rules, it was there in 1980, it was there in 1982, it's there today, but for some reason in 1981, it just fell out of the script. And no one was aware of it except for the umpires. And then when the managers and the players began to say, okay, let's call it a day, they said, we're still playing. So when the owners found out, they started calling the president of the International League, a man named Harold Cooper, and they couldn't get him. And then finally at around 3:45 in the morning, he returns the phone call, and he immediately summoned the umpire off the field. And Mr. Cooper says, end it now. Huh. And that's the only reason they stopped playing at 4:09 that morning.
In your book, you described the game took on a sort of absurd, dreamlike quality. I mean, was it just the numb backsides, or in what way?
Well, they started at around 8 o'clock on Holy Saturday night, and first the night itself played a role. It was very cold, and the wind was blowing in. The baseball would be hit into the air, and it wouldn't go anywhere. In the 21st, Rochester had gone ahead 2-1 on the top of the 21st, and then Wade Boggs gets up. Wade Boggs would go on to be a member of the Hall of Fame. He hits a double, ties up the game. He's standing on second base, and he looks into his dugout, and he can't tell whether his teammates want to hug him or kill him because now it's somewhere around 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wade Boggs is not the only famous baseball name in that game. There was another player who's known for his longevity showing up for games, Cal Ripken, Jr.
Cal Ripken, Jr., sure. He was 20 years old. And whereas Wade Boggs was not really much of a prospect, it seems silly to say that now, given his 3,000 hits, Ripken was a prospect. He was an up-and-comer. He was being groomed as the next third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles. But certainly Cal Ripken was in that game, and he played all 33 innings.
And he only went 2-for-13, right?
Right. If you looked at this game and said, well, you know, is this guy going to make the major leagues, you would say Ripken may not make it.
Huh. Well, you know, there were only a handful of people left in the stands who had stuck it out all night in the cold and, you know, a very intimate kind of, there was almost a brotherhood of the people who were still waiting in the stands. But this is the interesting part. For the 33rd inning, it was played 2 months later and everyone in the country was let in on this game. Did that cheapen it in some way?
There are some people who think it cheapened the moment. You know, the people who were still at the game in the 32nd inning, there were about 19 people, and they were freezing. But they were proud. They had stuck it out. They had witnessed something special. It was already the longest game in baseball history. Then there's a pause, as I say, in the 32nd inning. And when the game resumes, it just so happens that Major League Baseball is on strike, and the entire country is craving baseball. And so the country turns to the city of Pawtucket. And so whereas there were 19 people in the stands, there There are now 6,000. There are people from the BBC, Japanese reporters, all the national baseball media are there. And the 19 who returned for the conclusion of the game really felt as though all these other people now are going to say, oh, they were at the longest game. But nah, they really weren't.
Do you think it would have been better if the game had been finished in obscurity on Easter morning?
You know, there's a part of me that thinks that that would be a wonderful, fitting ending. But by the same token, the 33rd inning was good for Pawtucket, which was a struggling mill city at the time. It was good for this franchise, which was struggling at the time. And it was good for these minor league ball players who really, many of them would never play before tens of thousands in a major league stadium. This would be as good as it got. This is their piece of the Hall of Fame. They may not have made it to the major leagues, but they know that the scorebook and some other memorabilia from this game are in the Hall of Fame, and that means something to them. It's precious.
Dan Barry is a columnist for the New York Times. His new book is called Bottom of the 33rd, Hope, Redemption, and Baseball's Longest Game. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.